Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Lukes here at The Crossroads, and I'd like to welcome my guests from Canada. Welcome, Robert Klink.
Hello, Arnie. Good to be with you again.
No worries. Pleased to have you back and see that you're fighting fit. That's fantastic, Robert. Good news. And Wallace Klink. Welcome, Wallace.
Nice to see you again, Arnie, and to be with you on this topic that we're pursuing. Our weather here in Canada right now, in the west at least, is fairly wet and damp. Mm-hmm. Reminds me a little bit of the one and only time I was in Melbourne.
Okay. Yep. No worries. Well, okay, in Adelaide, we're in midwinter, obviously, and the weather is quite pleasant. It's fresh. Okay, it gets down to maybe 5 or 7 or something in the mornings, overnight. But we're up to mid-teens, 17 on a good day, and it's calm. It's pleasant for winter, and it's beautiful to see the almond blossom is out, and other fruit trees, the bud burst is close, and to me that's a continuation of the cycle of life, that the world is always being, if you like, our environment. We're watching it, and we're always seeing it as being creative, and it is creating new flowers, new life, new fruit, and the seasons come and the seasons go. And so it's a reflection to me of the natural world, the natural order. Our title, Creative Destruction, it has its roots in Marxism. And what we're seeing at the moment is we're seeing the destruction, if you like, the final stages of destruction of the West, the Christian West. Where its Christian roots are essentially from Europe, and they, if you like, they evangelized out into the world. But we're seeing that those roots are being torn asunder, and today we're witnessing the actual deliberate destruction of the West's economy and transferring that, the final stages of transferring that across to, if you like, supposedly third world countries, but in actual fact, nuclear powers such as China and India. Now, over the weekend, late last week, there was a newspaper article that I've come across from several sources, but this one is Reuters, and it deals with demonstrators storm the Serbian parliament protesting about the lockdown. And a later article that I did receive from Israel Shamir was in regard to the fact that these Serbians have pushed back against the lockdown. They've pushed back against the tyranny. They've pushed back at the deconstruction of their culture, of their life, of their historical and ancient freedoms. Now, creative destruction, as I understand it, is a Marxist concept, and we do need to explore this and understand it, because to me this is the outworking of their philosophy. I wonder if you could help us in this defining moment, Robert Klink.
Well, creative destruction is actually, it has its own article in Wikipedia I discovered today. Mm-hmm. And they identified Marx as being one of the earlier formulators of that phrase. It has a German equivalent, which is Vernichtung. Now, I was quite surprised some months ago when I heard that it was being circulated in conservative party circles in the UK. And I should have been aware of it, because it's been very prominent in Marxist theory for a long time now. It's basically the idea that in order to progress, you must destroy. So, and indeed, in order to progress significantly, you must destroy a lot. So what we're seeing now is an attempt to bring the whole structure of society down. And the thinking, I presume, of the people who are working at this is that it's going to lead to some great achievements and progress for society. Looking at the people who are promoting the idea, I can hardly imagine that they're going to contribute very much to that, because they don't seem to have anything but rioting in the streets in mind. But it's a total devaluation of all the achievements of the past. You know, all the glories of our culture, which we used to take pride in. The art and the architecture, the philosophy, mathematics, technological achievements, you know, amazing things that are created in medieval times that you can barely comprehend today, these fantastic clocks that were models of the whole solar system and things like that. They were fantastic. And there's no way that the people who are trying to tear everything down are going to generate anything equivalent to that in the future. Included in the glories of our culture are the institutions, such as, you know, trial by jury. What a wonderful innovation. It put the ultimate decision over your dispensation out of a legal situation in the hands of your fellow citizens. And could anything be safer for an individual who has been put in a position of having to defend himself? If you have 12 average people from your community examining your case, it seems to me that that's about the safest place to put your future. Even institutions like marriage, you know, marriage has been under assault now for decades. And the attempt has been made to devalue it. Look at all the entertainment products that come out, all the movies, marriage, divorce, you know, they're just insignificant. There's nothing sacred or fundamental about them. If you're not getting along, well, you just toss it in and move on to some other person. But that is not at all the concept of marriage that developed in Christian society, and indeed in pretty well every other society. Marriage is taken more seriously than it's developed to be regarded in the society we're in. So the idea is that everything has to be swept into the dustbin of history in order for man to progress. So the destruction is a good thing because it allows progress. But this implies a kind of worship of progress. And it's an arbitrary concept of progress because I think everybody wants nothing but progress. People normally want stability in their lives and they want the good things they've achieved to be preserved. But these dialectics practitioners want to tear all that down and discard it. Mm. It was an idea that was formulated by Leon Trotsky, although apparently he borrowed it from a banker named Helfand, who operated under the revolutionary name of Parvus. These were very, very brilliant people. And they, threw great spanners into the works of civilization because of their cleverness. But Trotsky came up with the idea of perpetual revolution. And perpetual revolution is just another word for creative destruction, because the revolution has to change everything constantly. There's no stability, there's no permanence about anything. So this is a thinking that has been inculcated in generations of students, particularly university students, for decades now. And we're reaping the destructive effects of the brainwashing of all those students. I was in university in the 1960s. I was studying history, and in the mathematics department, there weren't so many Marxists, I don't think so, although I think there were a few. But in the history department, I think it was probably 80% who were Marxists. And one of them was actually a fellow from Romania who somebody I met told me had been involved in ordering the executions of people. So how in the world somebody like that gets into a university institution in Alberta is a little bit strange. So what we've seen is a sabotage of our culture through the university educational system now for many, many decades, and it's not unprecedented. Remember that Adam Weishaupt was a university professor at the University of Ingolstadt, and he was working with the staff there. So they were spreading these revolutionary ideas of destruction, that we might progress to a new and better world, all the way back to that period. I'm sure it extends back even further, because it's something that is constantly coming back and being activated in society, and all this awful rioting and so on we've seen lately, and all the terrible assaults on our children with their perverted ideas about sex education. You know, it's all of a piece. It all holds together, and it's all designed to destroy what has gone in the past, so that a new world can be created. And people who have enjoyed the fruits of the old world are not going to like what's coming.
Yeah, no, thank you for that, Robert. That analysis is actually quite intimidating, because it means that the each part of our institutions is under threat. Each part of our history is under threat. They want to burn our books. They want to pull our statues down. They want to do away with all the achievements of the past. And somehow or other, in this destruction, they're going to build some sort of utopia. And of course, if you start looking at Mao's China and the creative destruction against those people that happened there, or the Soviet Russia, or Pol Pot, or Idi Amin, anywhere where there's an imbalance of power and you have a totalitarian, there's a potential that they take upon themselves in a position of power is to arbitrarily decide the value of someone else's life, not their own, of course, but someone else's, when power is seized or it's out of balance. So in that destruction, we're actually not looking at the lessons. We're not looking at the lessons of history. We may look at something like King John and recognize that this bloke needed to be pulled into line, or Henry VIII, this bloke, these tyrants, or Hitler or Stalin or whoever. These people needed to be pulled into line, and so we put in place institutions to pull them into line, to hold them to account. And this creative destruction is saying, well, no, we don't want that. We actually want to hand back power to some sort of elite, totalitarian, if you like, modern technocracy. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing the technocrats. We're seeing the doctors, the scientists determine that the world is not in a stable environment. The climate is going haywire, which it is not. The medical situation is going haywire, which it is not. So these technocrats are arbitrarily making these decisions, and you have to accept them as some sort of gospel, when in actual fact they're not. They're just fallible man. Your thoughts, please, Wallace Clank.
Well, that's the problem. You see, Marxism is materialist. It is atheistic. It does not believe in God. It's not even willing to bow to natural law. It is the power of the intellect to create the world in a manner that has been conceptualized. And so the important thing here is that there is no recognized external constraint upon the individual. And it boils down to a battle based on the idea that might is right. In fact, I'm not even sure if might comes or right comes into it. Might is exercised in order to achieve a preconceived outcome. So in other words, it is almost, I think, fair to say that it has no moral basis. It seems to be based on, very centrally on, the idea of equality. And that is supposed to contain some kind of justice. And so you have here a battle that is going on to create equality. Now, equality is not really something that is representative of nature. Nature actually represents great differentiation. So you can see, and these people, they're not willing to allow an alternate view, which is a pretty good exposure of the lack of sincerity, the lack of honesty that is associated with their ideas. They just want to beat opposition down, and beat it down by more or less whatever tactic they have at hand to use, without any morals. Morals are just foolish human mortal ideas. If you're going to bow to morals, you'll never get anywhere. You have to use force. And so that's what we're faced with, like it or not. I would have hoped that after the past century, with our experience with the dictators, that maybe we might have learned something. And I'm sure many people have, but it's quite obvious that there are many people in academia and elsewhere who have not learned it or don't want to learn it, and they have ambitions, and they simply do not bend to truth. They accuse everybody that is not in their camp of being, you know, purveyors of hatred. But you'll find that their doctrine originates from concepts in which hatred was very central. And destruction. And now, of course, we are having this resurgence, this bird that has reemerged from the ashes. And it's threatening the order of society, the achievements of society. So it makes you wonder, actually. Nature has its way of functioning. Human beings function, but we function in a way that allows us consciously to change our environment, to modify our world. And that, if you think of it, is a very powerful thing. But if it's conducted with the wrong motivations, towards the wrong objectives, it is an extremely dangerous thing. So it has the potential of good and bad, and for extremes in both directions. And the people who are rejecting the idea of any external authority obviously are driven by pride, because they feel or represent themselves as being qualified to make world changes that they alone claim the competence to oversee. Now, if these people are on the wrong track, we're in for tremendous trouble. And that's what we're faced with today. There's this culture, destroy the culture idea. Now, the culture is a build-up of achievements, some bad things, but the overcoming of those things to build up a civilization. And those achievements do not have to be destroyed in order for us to continue to advance. It's a deceit, it's a lie to suggest that everything you have must be sacrificed, because it's all inherently evil. So, it's a lie that results in destruction.
Yeah.
Because the idea is the existing order of things is entirely evil, and it deserves to be destroyed, which is a moral sort of position. Rather strange that they would be taking a moral position, being people who don't really believe in such nonsense as morals.
Mm. Yeah.
So it shows a lack of consistency in their own thinking, in their own professed adherence to reason. They're not reasonable, but they would like to present themselves to their world, their victim, as though they were the epitome of reason. They're not. They're full of inconsistencies, and not only inconsistencies, but inconsistencies which lead to policies which are highly damaging to other people. So I'm not just sure if I should go on at this stage. It's an intriguing subject. It's almost as though the world operating under natural law operates as it does and seems to function in a normal, what the word means, in a proper manner until human beings get involved. And we evoke changes which can be good, but which can also be bad, which can be well-intended, ill-intended, which can be well-instructed and ill-instructed. And we seem to have been given a unique ability in this respect. We possess intelligence, the power to reason, and we seem to be given the power to use it for good or evil.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank it's almost that. As though if things had been left alone and things had been left natural, that the natural world would have carried on in its way. But we've learned or been led to make a tremendous success and a tremendous mess of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting phenomena you're describing there, Wallace, because I think of there's a couple of things. Robert mentioned trial by jury. Now, there was historically, there was a thing called trial by combat. And I also believe that people were assessed based on dunking them in the river. If they survived, then they were not guilty. And it's just this sort of, if you like, hallucinogenic perspective. It's an abstraction that by violence, you're right. The bigger knight, the stronger knight, the whatever, the better fighter makes something right. Now, this is, I'm guilty of it. I watch martial arts movies, and obviously they're orientated towards China, and it shows me within their culture. One is that it's one of feudalism and lords, and the other is that violence seems to be a response to almost anything, either revenge or whatever. And I think, okay, what is the Christian response to a predicament, a difficult predicament? What is it? Well, it should be pursuing of justice, if you like, or pursuing of law and placing it before a court to assess the right and wrong of it. These are our customs. These are our... So there is clearly a distinction that there's an evolution of thinking that's going on there. Of where China was, I think it's been described correctly as the Middle Kingdom, who sort of accepted their lot perhaps maybe 500 or 700 years ago. This is where we are when we really haven't moved on from there, within their culture. Whether that's good or bad, that's neither here nor there. The thing is that that's where they are. Whereas we have moved on, and we have moved on by these, if you like, these cultural developments of innocent till proven guilty. Which, of course, the French is different. It's guilty until proven innocent. So that in itself is based on the if you like, the Christian concept that when Jesus stood before the Sanhedrin, their false witnesses were not able to substantiate it, but there was a corrupt leader at the time who found him guilty no matter what and insisted on a disproportionate punishment, things like that. This is why the evolution of the Christian thinking has come to a point where punishment has to be proportional. It has to be considered. And, of course, even to the individual circumstances and the individual, the uniqueness of the individual, these are all part of our development, of our thinking. Now, to deconstruct those and to go back to might is right, if you like, clubs and axes, and this is how we're going to resolve our differences, it really is a regression from where we are to something that is not good at all. And I think it's demonstrated. You bring up these totalitarians of history, and especially the last century, probably the most violent century in the history of mankind, the most willingly destructive, in the millions, even to their own people, in the millions. It's just, it's hideous what's been going on. And surely there's a profound lesson to learn from that. And if you like, you've got to bring into account, what was the compass? What was the compass that actually guided us to form a better point of view? And it was that the individual was sacred, that the law or the purpose of law, of customs, of constitutions, of all things, was to serve the individual, to provide that environment which was most suitable, that each and every individual could be served, not a majority, so that you had a majority of 50% plus one dominated a minority of 50% minus one. That's not effective. That's domination. That's the, if you like, might is right perspective. Whereas it was that the purpose of government, the purpose of institutions, even a golf club, you don't have it that the golf club dominates the majority over the minority, but rather the golf club serves the well-being of the individual, providing the right environment so that you are free to go and enjoy a game of golf whenever you want to. As an individual, I want to do it on Friday mornings. Well, if it's not, as long as it's not ladies' mornings, well, why not? You can do it on Friday mornings, rain, hail, or shine. Or I only want to do it sunny days. I want to do it rainy days. I want to deal with the buffeting of the wind and become a better golfer. It's there to serve. That's the purpose of these institutions. So when our Lord said the Sabbath, the system of law, was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, it meant that the totalitarian who imposed it, if you like the Pharisee, who imposed the system of law over the people, totalitarianism in that instance, was not the correct design. The purpose of law is to serve man, is to provide an environment where individuals are free to come and go as they choose. They are free to pursue their own medical choices. They're free to pursue their own careers, their own vocations, their own calling. These are all part of the evolution of the individual. Now, to turn around creative destruction on that means that we go back to the mob. We go back to the, if you like, the tribe. And it's a warring tribe. Whichever tribe is dominant, and the rest are slaughtered. And that's what we've seen in this last century. The domination each time ends in slaughter. Is that really where we want to go? Or are we going to actually look back and find that compass? What brought us to where we are today? What brought us? We've got to go and find that compass. And in my view, that compass is, if you like, anchored in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Your thoughts, please, Robert Klink.
Well, the idea of the revolutionaries today is to erase all sense of historical memory. And there's a purpose behind this, and that is exactly to prevent people from looking for the inspiration where you have suggested it should be found, Arnie. They're trying to prevent religious services from being held. They're destroying churches. I read the other day that on average in France, three churches are being set alight every day. This is not accidental. This is a campaign against the Christian faith. And I got to provoke a reaction at some point, but seems to be somewhat slow in coming. And the really distressing thing is that the so-called civic authorities and so on are not intervening in any effective way to protect our heritage. And even what you mentioned there about justice, the Christian concept of justice, which is to protect the individual against abuse and false reporting and that sort of thing. But nowadays, there are two kinds of justice. There's the justice that we used to assume was sort of written on the hearts of men, that you, if you presented a set of facts, then you could ascertain what was fair in resolving the outcome of a legal situation. But now what's predominant is something called social justice. And this is just the old trick that Marxists have used over and over of destroying a good term by attaching an adjective to it that suggests that it is not something fundamental, but it's just sort of an opinion, an alternative way of looking at things. If they talk about social justice, well, they can define that however they want. They're not appealing to something inside the individual, which gives them a guidance in dealing with their fellow man. So this is a part of the reframing of vocabulary, which was so brilliantly analyzed in George Orwell's 1984. Everyone must read that book about the rewriting of the dictionary and the redefinition of all the terms and the erasing of historical facts so that nobody would ever know those things had happened before. Well, the tearing down of statues is exactly the same as that. They're trying to erase all sense of our cultural past. And if they can do that, well, we're in for very rough times, because as you said, Arnie, they did that in Russia, or in Russia, certainly with the destruction of all the churches after the Bolshevik Revolution, and in China, they had the Cultural Revolution. And well, we know the principle underlying the Cultural Revolution, because Mao expressed it very succinctly. He said, power comes out of the end of a gun. Well, do we want to live in a society where that is the underlying assumption? That's not a very pleasant prospect. So it will be absolutely might makes right, and the possessors of the guns are going to be making the decisions for everybody else, the smallest decisions of their lives, and surveilling them and telling them what they can and cannot do. It's a vision of hell, really. So one hopes that people will get some kind of a grasp of the thinking of the people who are promoting all this stuff. And that thinking is dialectical materialism. It's Marxist dialectics. It's very important that people should educate themselves on this so they can understand what is motivating these people to go out and run riot and sort of act like lunatics. Well, it's not lunacy in their perspective. It is the creative destruction that will allow the creation of a brave new world. And that's what we're witnessing in Western countries everywhere.
Yeah, thank you for that, Robert. I might add to that that, okay, you mentioned the people on the streets and the demonstration, Black Lives Matter or whatever, but in actual fact, there's design, and of course, design and coordination higher up. And we've got to consider that this is not coming from a spontaneous, if you like, from the floor of people who are frustrated out of predicament, but they're actually part of the shock troops for a bigger picture. And that bigger picture, of course, you see coming out of, if you like, organizations like the World Economic Forum, which is really an outworking of capital and communism together. It's where they align, where they actually, the nexus, they come together in order to plan strategy. And of course, because it's in a dialectical fashion, it's hard to conceive. How do we see these opposites? And yet the policy is the same. The policy of one is one of power. We're at the 34-minute mark, so we're going well. Your thoughts, please, Wallace Klink.
Well, that's right, Arnie. It's a diabolical skill in the use of the language, wherein you're able to confuse your listeners because you're presenting things which are essentially contradictory. And the human mind, in its natural course of function, attempts to integrate things in a manner that bring things together in a constructive and fruitful manner. But if you've got nihilism, mental anarchy, you simply cannot organize your thoughts in a manner which is going to bring about fruition of constructive achievements. And that's exactly what is done today, because language has been perverted. And that's one of the problems, too, in that language has been used to the infiltration of Christianity itself. And Christianity has been perverted in some of its objectives in a way that makes it vulnerable to all sorts of weaknesses and false policies like full employment and things of that nature, especially that, because that's the core of fascism and communism. It's the core of any tyranny, because a tyranny is the mobilization, a forced mobilization of human action and energy. So so that language is a tremendously powerful thing, because it shapes the attitudes of mankind. If you think about it, if you have some attitude towards something, did you not acquire that by exposure to some kind of verbal expression? I mean, if you go back and look for the origin of your thoughts, you've come by them through language, because language is the way which we would transmit our concepts, our ideas. So he who controls ideas controls the world, basically. And you have that, what has happened in the tremendous, the absolutely outrageous centralization of ownership, control, and policy in the world, the realm of ideas, through the media and through the educational system. We have been misled, and this has changed, perverted, twisted our views toward each other, toward our origins, toward what is right and wrong. And it's made us vulnerable to attack. And of course, the Christian idea is being assaulted as the source of our problems, when in fact the source of our problems is not Christianity. It's a perverted Christianity that has been distorted by those who have infiltrated it and who have corrupted it. And then you get bad results, and these same people come along and say, you see what a destructive and damaging and inadequate philosophy and policy it is. So you see, they work from within and they work from without. Mm-hmm. And it really leaves you in a very, very vulnerable position, unless you have been inclined to really look into things, to study things, to look for truth, to seek the kingdom, one way of putting it. And in that way, you're defenseless. And then they come along with some very destructive ideas, damaging ideas, inhuman ideas, and present them as an alternative to what we have, saying that what we have is not what it is really alleged to be. So, and that's why Christians have been badly led astray. They do not understand the practical nature of their philosophy. You see, I think, and so they have been actually led to pursue policies which are consonant with their enemies. And then we wonder why we have trouble. And somehow we have to, there are certain seals that they speak of as needing to be broken. Well, I'm not sure exactly where we stand in that, but I think it involves the exposure as truth, of truth as an alternative to falsehood. And that is what we have to do. We have to somehow or another seek and find the kingdom in terms of truth, reality, and try to help others to do the same when we feel we've made some progress that way. And I think that is the only way. And I do think, Arnie, also, you were mentioning the way people are running around from pillar to post trying to solve solutions to our problems in this world. And I think they're trying to solve these things by the power of their intellect, whereas they should be trying to solve them in the first instance by establishing a community or with whatever power it is that rules the universe. In other words, not to look to our own mortal reason as a solution to everything. We should reason, but if we don't reason in the right spirit, then our reason allows us actually to dig ourselves deeper and deeper into a well of ignorance and iniquity. Because reason is the power to put things together. And if you put the wrong things together in the wrong way, because you're not motivated by the spirit. And the spirit is something that is beyond mortal reason. I think it's something that is, I don't know if the word just intuitive is correct. It's something that you naturally do if you're in tune with whatever is the motivating force of this, of life.
Yeah.
And I think we should start looking for a different and a higher motivation if we expect to solve our problems.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Wally. That's beautifully put. You brought several things to mind. The first is that an observation of natural law, you're putting things down to the spirit, and I understand that and I respect that, but I also see that it's very important to see the outworking of things, how they actually, when the rubber hits the road, the effect of them. Now, we look at, say, Maoism, we look at Bolshevism, whatever, Pol Pot, the effect of the rubber when it hit the road. We saw that. We saw the carnage of Nazism. We saw the carnage. That is the end result. So conceiving something in your mind is only half of the equation. And it's a very small half at that. What you've got to do is you've got to place it into context. You've got to actually embody it. And with that word embody, I want to actually just make reference to a particular fellow on our website in our PDF library. And I'm pretty sure I've got a couple of his articles there. And that is Ian McGilchrist. McGilchrist there, can the divided brain tell us anything? Divided brain, divided world, etc., etc. Now, McGilchrist, he actually mapped, with the help of others, he actually mapped the methods of thinking, if you like, the methods of processing thought in our mind. And he mapped it using exploring the difficulties that stroke patients have, hundreds and hundreds of them. And these stroke patients were analyzed as to the area of damage and how they actually processed thought. And the two hemispheres process thinking differently. The left hemisphere, if you like, is an abstraction and only deals with numbers or facts, whereas the right hemisphere places things into context. It looks at the real world and how the, if you like, the abstraction is embodied, how it actually works. So the church used to teach us at one stage about natural law, how their things actually work, how, if you like, you look at I looked at some sheepdogs the other day, beautiful creatures they were, and then their nature, what it is instinctive to herd sheep, to actually be around and running around, and it is different. You get a Pomeranian, you get a sheepdog, you get a Doberman. They had different characteristics to each, and so it is, even one litter. The group of dogs coming from one litter is different. We are unique creatures, and we've got to take into account that uniqueness. When we deal with our neighbour, all neighbours are not the same. Each neighbour is different. And each, if you like, husband and wife, each family is different, how they choose to bring up their children. You can't just do a one-size-fits-all. So under the, if you like, the philosophy of equality, there is no quality at all. No quality at all. Now, when you go to pick an apple off a tree, if there's no quality at all, then you can have all the rotten ones. Absolutely. You can have them. And you can have as many as you like. You can come to my tree and you don't believe in it, you can have all the rotten ones. But I will be selective and I'll choose the particular fruit I choose. And what's left, I'll give to the chooks. It's not wasted. It's just converted into other forms.
And you shall know them by their...
by their fruits. That's right. By their fruits. And so it is the same with the individual. When we're actually doing things, the outworking of those things, the fruits of what we do. So it is with government, so it is with policy, so it is with principle. Culture is the same as well. There are good fruits. You shall know them by their fruits. I was reading the other day, and I'll sort of pull up stumps on this because we're at 46 minutes, but I was reading the other day of Captain James Cook and his, if you like, his circumnavigation, his travels as he was heading into the Pacific, and where he actually circumnavigated New Zealand, the North Island, before he headed across to find the new Great South Land. There was a Frenchman, with due respect, and I apologise for not knowing his name, but he was actually outside of Sydney Heads, but he didn't know it. He was outside of Sydney Heads 50 days before Cook. 50 days. Australia could have been colonised by the French, but it wasn't. Because between those two people, there was a difference. And it's interesting that French captain went on to cross the Pacific and across there, and he ended up in really bad shape. His whole crew was in really bad shape as he approached the South American coast, and is so desperate, he dressed in his entire regalia into one of the boats to go ashore in order to present himself as an authority to approach the colony that was there, and the boat capsized and he drowned. And yet Cook went on to map the east coast of Australia and to change, if you like, history, that individual history. And it's a most interesting book that I can't remember his name, the professor who wrote the book, but it was beautiful in commemoration of 250 years since Cook circumnavigated New Zealand and mapped the east coast of Australia. And of course, then went on for Australia to become a colony of the British Empire. So that part of history made the difference, that unique individual. He was not equal with anyone. He was not, and neither are you. And neither should we accept it that our culture is somehow or other equal with other cultures. It is not. It has gone ahead and it has given us institutions. It has given us trial by jury, not by combat. Is America right to go and bomb these people from Serbia? Is it right to do those only 20 years ago? Was it right? That is might is right. And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at that as a principle that this is so, so wrong. They have no right to do it. But we're seeing it demonstrated. And if this is the world that we want to live in and accept mediocrity, accept equality, well, then that's unfortunately is going to be a living hell, as you said. It really is. Your 49-minute mark, it's been an interesting day. I'm sorry that we really haven't done sufficient closing comments and thoughts, but I will give you just a couple of minutes each, please. Robert Klink.
Well, as opposed to the creative destruction and the order out of chaos idea that is being promoted today, the Christian concept was one of an unfolding of the universe. And it was something in which we participated and which we could study and observe and learn from to benefit from furthering our knowledge about it. So it's a totally different concept of all this conflict and identity politics, and, you know, even going back to the Big Bang, the people who insist that the universe was created by some gigantic, horrible event of violence. Everything is violence in the academic world, it seems. So Christianity has a totally different mindset, and that is a mindset of harmony, and it's also a mindset of an abundant universe. And the only reason people advocate equality, which doesn't exist anywhere in the universe as far as I can see — I'd like to see anything in the universe that is actually equal to anything else, even if it's of the same type or something, it's not equal. And the only reason that people advocate equality is that they are being denied access to the abundance of the universe. It's crowding in around us all the time, but particularly the financial powers have interposed themselves between that abundance and the people for whom it was intended by the Creator.
Beautiful, beautiful. And that is an abundant God. Yes, the lilies of the field. Your thoughts and closing comments, please, Wallace Klink.
Yes, Arnie, I think that is very well stated. I think that there is a law. Well, Eric Butler referred to it in his book, the law of love. That is a thing that goes beyond anything we know in a temporal sense. It is something that inheres within the universe. And I think that it is the only law that we can trust. Any human laws, they may work in a sense to guide us, but they are always subject to human weakness, foibles. And I think that when we speak of law, we should not confine our idea of law to some kind of rules that men make. What is it that makes you in awe when you look into the face of a little child? What was it that fascinated you when you looked at these sheep that you were speaking of? Mm-hmm. What is it that has this fascination and an attraction that goes beyond anything you can reduce to reason in terms of words? It is something that is. It's something in your nature. And unless we can get back to that, and that, so that our reason is guided primarily in our practical affairs by reference to that love, to that universal, all-prevailing love, then we are not in harmony with the universe. And so we are not going to succeed if we just run around trying to find solutions of our own on this little globe upon which we live.
Thank you for that, Wally. That's beautifully put. I'm just going to do a short advert for those viewers who are not aware of some of the services that we do. The Australian League of Rights website, alor.org, you'll find the On Target. On Target is a weekly journal produced. It disseminates the news. It actually goes into what is actually unfolding politically in Australia and around the world. It's very, very important. We've also got the New Times Survey, which is a monthly journal looking at particular debt finance and the correct relationship to the individual. And of course, as the front page shows, we do the videos, the broadcast held on our Crossroads website, and the podcasts, which we do in a couple of days' time, that's held on our Freedom Potentials website. So thank you so much, gentlemen, for today. I really, really appreciated your time and the discussion on creative destruction, an analysis from a Christian perspective. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Cheers.
Thank you, Arnie. It's wonderful to reflect on these things.